Can trade secrets help protect innovation in healthcare? Welcome back for another episode of Cartmel's in Conversation. I'm your host, Laura Elder, and in today's episode, we're going to discuss trade secrets. What are they? How do they work? And to what extent might they help protect innovation in the healthcare sector, which is perhaps more traditionally focused on patents? I'm really pleased to be joined by my colleagues, Chloe Taylor, who's a senior associate in our transactions team, and Liz McKinley, counsel in our life sciences group. It's been a little over 5 years now since the UK's trade secrets regulations came into force. Chloe is going to help us unpack what these new regulations have done for trade secrets, and we'll discuss their pros and cons as an alternative or complement to patent protection. And Liz, meanwhile, is going to bring her considerable expertise in life sciences to bear to give us some insights into how trade secrets may benefit healthcare companies. Welcome to the podcast, Liz and Chloe.
Thank you, Laura.
Thanks, Laura. Great to be here.
So in preparing for our conversation today, I spent some time, as one does, Googling, looking for a nice pithy layman's definition of what is a trade secret. And I think my favourite that I came across is this. A trade secret is a confidential piece of information that gives a company a competitive advantage over its rivals. This could be anything from a recipe to a formula, a design, a process, or a method. I suppose the classic example that springs to mind for me is the formula for Coca-Cola, which amazingly has been kept secret now for over 100 years. But away from my layman's definition, to talk to somebody who knows far more about this than I do, Chloe, perhaps you could start by telling us what the legal definition is of a trade secret.
Sure, Lara, I'm happy to. And I will start also, as well as thanking you and Liz for being here, also apologising slightly to the listener in that, as you may hear, I have a little frog in my throat, which hopefully won't impede us too much. But yeah, so in terms of how we define trade secrets here in the UK, so we have two separate regimes for protecting trade secrets. They operate in parallel. So we have the common law of confidentiality, and that's that body of judge-made law, right? Cases that have built up over many years. And from that, we get a definition of confidential information, which is information that has a necessary quality of confidence, and it was provided or used in circumstances giving rise to an obligation of confidence. And then in terms of breach of confidence, was used without the authorization of the holder. We also get from this stream of case law the idea that there is a subset of confidential information called trade secrets, and that trade secrets are, if you like, a kind of extra special, extra secret form of confidential information. The second of the two regimes that we have for protecting trade secrets comes about from the Trade Secrets Regulations 2018. And they came into force in the UK on the 9th of June 2018, and they implemented the EU's Directive on Trade Secrets from 2016. So it's take us a little step back in terms of why do we have that second thing? What is the regulations giving us that we didn't have before? Well, it's kind of interesting, I think, in that in the passage of the EU directive, the UK obviously did some consultation and did some thinking about what it needed to do to implement that EU directive, because it came about when we were pre-Brexit. And at one point, the UK said, UK government said there was, you know, nothing needed to be done, actually, and that there was nothing in the directive which went above and beyond the existing protections afforded by the UK laws. So effectively the common law that we just talked about. And there was obviously a change of mind, because we do have the regulations. Ultimately, they were enacted. I don't think it is breaking any confidence, as it were, to say that was likely to be a result of Brexit itself, to ensure that the UK stayed in line with the EU in relation to the protection of trade secrets. But also, we got this new definition of trade secrets, which is a definition drawn from the TRIPS agreement into English law, and that's the same definition that you'll see in the US legislation as well as other places around the world. So we have this much more harmonized definition of trade secret at this point. And so I really liked your pithy layman's definition, Lara, but this isn't that different.
It's not even the beginning of the story, right?
This isn't that different, right? So it's defined as information that is secret in the sense that it's not as a body or in the precise configuration or assembly of its components, generally known among or readily accessible to persons within the circles that normally deal with that kind of information. And then it has commercial value because it's secret and it's been subject to reasonable steps under the circumstances to keep it secret.
Right. So it's not enough that you're just not telling someone about it. It's that that piece of information you're not disclosing has got to be commercially important and not generally known or generally guessable. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So one of the things that you have there is that it's the precise configuration or assembly as well. So you might have individual elements of that information which are publicly known or previously known, but you've somehow put the information together in a new way, and that is secret.
Right. And I mean, just taking a step back for a moment. So we're talking about trade secrets, obviously, but they may, I suppose, be useful to protect the sorts of things, maybe not, we'll discuss this, but the sorts of things that a patent might protect, which is obviously a very different approach where you're forced to disclose what you're doing. That's the kind of trade-off by then getting the grant and monopoly. So how do trade secrets differ from patents, and why might companies value one over the other for protecting their innovations?
Yeah, trade secrets are in many ways the absolute opposite of patents. As you've already alluded to, and we've talked about that definition, trade secrets are valuable because they are secret. And inherent in that definition is the fact that it's been kept confidential. So any ability that you have to enforce a trade secret or to maintain the protection of the trade secret comes from being able to show that you've taken steps, what the legislation calls reasonable steps, to protect that trade secret. In contrast, patents are really a way to encourage companies to disclose and put into the public sphere their innovations. So in effect, information which they otherwise would keep confidential to protect their commercial advantage, right? So for patents, you have that very clearly defined trade-off between the publicity of your invention against the monopoly of right to use that invention for a fixed period of time, typically 20 years. Contrast to trade secrets, there's no hard and fast time period for which a trade secret will last. And you mentioned at the top that Coca-Cola example, which is a brilliant one because it's been a secret for so long and yet absolutely retains commercial importance. The recipe for Coca-Cola, it's important that it remains secret because without that secrecy, everyone else could be making colas to the same recipe. And then the only distinction they have is a brand distinction, which obviously, Lara, you know, can be one that's incredibly important and people can make a lot from, right? But it's not the same.
It's not the same. And people also care about what, in this case, a drink, what it tastes like. And I think in the case of Coca-Cola, I'm right to say there've been various attempts over the years to sort of reverse engineer and recreate it. But people can still tell it's not the real Coca-Cola. So it's been a very successfully guarded secret in that sense.
Yeah, but your point about reverse engineering, I think, is a good one because you can reverse engineer trade secrets. The way in which they're protected is it's a protection against misusing the trade secret. So it's not a monopoly right. So that if you come up with the same thing via publicly accessible information, then there's nothing to stop you from using that. So that is an important distinction, I think, with patents. There's a limitation there in terms of what you can protect.
And does that make trade secrets quite difficult to enforce, actually? Because you need to show that somebody has had access to your information and made it public rather than simply that the output of that trade secret has been somehow replicated.
Yes, definitely. Enforcement is hard, I think, for trade secrets. There are kind of two steps you really need to do, and one of them you've mentioned, but also you need to show that you have a trade secret to protect. And even establishing that the information that you're claiming as a trade secret is properly so-called is not always straightforward. And we see that in kind of previous case law. In the UK, this is still kind of the old common law case law, but typically people think the information is secret, maybe a customer list, and the court disagrees.
So you mentioned before that as part of the legal definition or the case law around this, one would have to take reasonable steps to protect a trade secret. I mean, do we have any sense from the case law in the UK so far what that actually means in practice?
So that is the million-dollar question, I think, right now. That is the thing that people have wanted and have expected to come out, but we don't yet have a case that relates to the trade secrets regulations, which really confirms what reasonable steps are. Obviously, we have previous case law that talks about the kind of common law provisions and what is expected there in terms of keeping things confidential. So we can use that to give us some clues. And it tends to be a kind of multi-layered approach. So, for example, limiting the distribution of the trade secrets to a need-to-know basis. So who gets access to what? It might be putting password protection on a file if it's an electronic file. It might be more broadly the IT security that you have in place in your business to ensure that it's not easy for people to steal trade secrets, right? But each of those things will depend on the facts of the case. So they're good things to enact, but it's hard to give a kind of tick list of if you do this, then you will have fulfilled the requirement of reasonable steps.
So I suppose that's one of the aspects that might make it less attractive, because there may ultimately be a higher bar and possibly even a greater cost in doing that within your organisation than filing for a patent, which we all know is expensive, but at least we know where we stand with that.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think it is also somewhat of a hidden cost, right? Because you can be quite clear about what the costs might be for pursuing a patent application through the course of prosecution. People like Liz can generally maybe be able to give estimates around what those costs are likely to be. Whereas for a trade secret, keeping something secret like that, it's much harder to do because it relates so much to how your business controls information in general. So whether it's that IT security piece we've mentioned, whether it's how you also manage things like personal data. So there's lots of different things that it's part of or that it could be part of. So it can be hard to sort of identify those costs.
But then, as the Coca-Cola example shows brilliantly, it could be extremely valuable for an almost limitless period of time, unlike a patent, which has its fixed term and that's the end of the story.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. They really can last forever in theory, right?
Is there an in practice?
Yeah, of course there's an in practice. And there's a couple of different parts to this. So one actually is something that we've seen coming out of case law in the past. So I think there have been a couple of cases this year already in which the parties in the cases have been asking the court to advise them on how to use information that's in an upcoming trial. So whether that information is confidential or not, and if so, what the scope of use can be for that information. So those kinds of discussions are discussions we would have had before the regulations, by the way. It's not necessarily driven by those regulations, but it is interesting to see. We had one decision in this at the end of January, which is called Aurora Cavallari and Mercedes-Benz, and another decision, which is IBM versus LZ Labs decision in February, in which the court was asked to consider these similar things. And in both cases, they referred to this idea that in the EU context, there's a kind of 5-year rule of thumb. So the idea that something will only be deemed a trade secret for around 5 years. And this is straying outside my comfort zone a little bit because we're talking about EU competition law, apparently, is where this comes from. So there's a EU case called Evonik de Gousa and European Commission, in which the ECJ suggested that information which was secret or confidential but is over 5 years old must, as a rule, on account of the passage of time, be considered historical and therefore as having lost its secret or confidential nature, unless, exceptionally, the party relying on that nature shows that despite its age, that information still constitutes essential elements of its commercial position or that of interested parties. So in that case, and it's worth saying that the English courts haven't generally taken this up as an idea, this five-year rule of thumb, but I think it's an interesting one for businesses to have in the back of their mind as a kind of average length, perhaps, of time for a trade secret to exist, because you've clearly got extremes the other way. Like at the long end, you've got the Coca-Cola, and maybe at the short end, you've got something like the information in an unfiled patent application, for example, that is going to be confidential, but only for a relatively short period of time before it's published.
Yeah, well, that's very clear. So we don't want anyone going away with the idea that a trade secret can only last 5 years, but depending on the context, it might be a relatively short-lived thing, or it might be a forever thing, depending on what sort of secret we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's a really helpful canter through the legal position as it stands. I mean, Liz, maybe we can turn to you. We've sort of built this as discussing trade secrets in the healthcare sector. In my head, at least, and I'm obviously about as far from a patent or life sciences expert as one could possibly get, but trade secrets for me are always most commonly associated with the sort of food and the tech and the manufacturing sectors. You know, we've talked about Coca-Cola. The other one that springs to mind for me is the taste of Kentucky Fried Chicken. Apparently, I was looking it up, 11 herbs and spices. And again, nobody's quite managed to get the exact combination for that taste. Also, things like Google's algorithm, something like Apple's product design process. That's apparently a very closely guarded secret that results in these very sleek machines that we all carry in our pockets. So I guess trade secrets are less commonly associated with the healthcare sector, which is where patents kind of reign supreme. Why is that in particular?
Thanks, Lara. So yeah, I think you're completely right. I think we haven't traditionally thought so much about trade secrets in the context of the healthcare sector. I think a lot of the reason behind that is because inventions in the healthcare sector will often be disclosed as part of the approval process. So for therapeutics, often the information that lies behind an invention, what the drug is, will be put out there as part of the approval process. Or in other situations, it might be that you talked earlier, Chloe was talking about reverse engineering, and often the products can easily be reverse engineered. So thinking about protein products or nucleic acid products, those sequences can easily be sequenced and reverse engineered so that third parties can know what the invention is once they get their hands on the product. And I think that means there's just no way to prevent disclosure in a lot of situations in the healthcare sector. And so what that means is, of course, it makes sense to obtain a patent so you actually get some reward for that inevitable disclosure. So I think that is probably one of the main reasons why we've not traditionally thought about trade secrets in the life sciences sector. But I think even for inventions where it might be possible to keep them secret, so perhaps because they relate to upstream products or they relate to manufacturing processes or things like that, there's still a weighing up of whether disclosing the invention might still be worthwhile. For instance, I mean, Chloe just talked about the five-year rule of thumb on trade secrets. I think for many life sciences companies, that wouldn't feel enticing enough, you know, the worry that you might not be entitled to enough duration of protection.
Versus your 20 years plus if you get a patent.
Exactly. I think if you felt convinced that you'd be able to keep your secret forever, that might be different. But if you kind of knew that was an unlikely thing to happen, then perhaps it's less appealing to try and keep something secret. I think another consideration, which is certainly true in the healthcare sector, but maybe other sectors too, is the idea that if you decide to keep your invention a secret, you're potentially putting yourself at risk, because if another company in a similar field decides to patent their similar invention, you might find yourself in a difficult position in terms of freedom to operate, when if you had just disclosed your invention when you had it, which might have been before that second company came along, then you might have blocked their patentability and prevented that FTO risk from existing. So I think that's another problem potentially, where people will think, well, are other people in my area patenting? And if they are, then I need to be patenting too, so that I don't lose out on the benefit and just face the risk on the freedom to operate side. So I think that's another thing, that once an industry is doing lots of patenting, that just becomes more and more, because it means all the other companies think that they should also be doing the same to prevent themselves getting into that situation.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So it sounds like trade secrets are not particularly important in this sector, but are there contexts in which trade secrets might still benefit healthcare companies, do you think?
I think there are, and I think they're probably increasing with time. So I think there are some contexts where if the upside of getting a patent doesn't feel quite so strong, then you'll feel this much more of a balance and much more of a weighing up to be done. So I think there's a few different contexts where we might see that. But for instance, if you're working in an area where patentability might be a problem, so that might be, we're seeing more and more in the life sciences sector, the use of computer implemented inventions and AI. So for instance, in drug discovery, and also, you know, certain algorithms being used potentially in diagnostic methods and things like that. And I think there, I guess it's life sciences kind of creeping out of life sciences
and more into the tech space.
Exactly. And so finding ourselves in a situation where, first of all, yeah, patentability might be a problem, or at least obtaining the breadth of claim that a company might like. If that's not going to be possible, either because of exclusions or for other reasons, then perhaps the upside of disclosure isn't there. If you're not going to get a claim that's going to actually be able to keep a competitor off the market, then perhaps keeping your algorithm to yourself is a better idea. And so then trade secrets might be worthwhile. And again, yeah, if what you're going to end up with is a claim that's extremely narrow, which in some of these kind of newer fields of the life sciences we are seeing, then if there's going to be a trivial workaround for a third party, then actually just keeping your way of doing things secret might be better than disclosing what you see to be your preferred method. So I think that's one area where we're seeing companies think about this, the weighing up of the two options a little bit more. I think another one really can be when infringement is a difficult thing to determine. So this is something we see in kind of methods of manufacture, and again, kind of the use of algorithms, where if a company wonders whether they're going to be able to identify that somebody is infringing, then again, is it worth disclosing their particular method of manufacture that they know to perhaps be a particularly good one? Is it worth putting that out there if you're not going to be able to know if somebody is later copying that? And I think that's something that we're certainly seeing people thinking about alternatives to protecting their inventions in that area. I mean, one thing to say on that is we've obviously, as patent attorneys, we can't stop talking about the UPC at the moment. And we know that we do have potential new measures in the UPC to try and go out and obtain that information about whether somebody's infringing. But you still have to have some idea about what might be going on to use those measures. So if you're in a situation where you think, I'm never going to be able to know whether somebody would be infringing my claim, then that's, I think, where you're at the position where actually keeping what you're doing a trade secret might be a good idea.
Wow, there's quite a lot of strategic considerations at play here, and things that need to be thought about early on before anybody starts disclosing anything to anybody else. Well, the answer is obviously come and talk to Liz.
I think that's right. Just don't disclose anything. That's what patent attorneys always shout at everybody, I think.
Don't disclose anything. Well, I mean, actually, that takes me neatly on to my next question, which is perhaps a question for you, Chloe, again. I mean, what can healthcare companies, I suspect it'll be similar to answers you've given previously, but what can healthcare companies do to protect their confidential information?
I think the word you've used there as strategy is really key. So having a robust innovation capture process, for example, where people are able to review that information, review what kind of innovations are coming up, and with the help of people like us, determine whether a particular innovation is right for patent protection or is something that is going to be a better fit to be kept as a trade secret. I think that's something, as you say, you want to do early so that you can identify it as far as possible. It's a really hard thing to do. I don't want to underestimate how difficult that is for our in-house colleagues, but where it is possible, it is the kind of ideal, the kind of gold standard, I think, that you are able to capture and know what you're creating and decide whether it's something that should be a patent or something that should be kept as trade secret. And then if you've decided to keep it as trade secret, then you're able to make those steps that we were talking about before.
Those reasonable steps.
Absolutely, absolutely. In order to keep it a trade secret for as long as you commercially want to keep it a secret, I guess. And so that might be something that's relatively short-lived, as we said, or it might be something that's much longer-lived, depending on exactly what it is. But I think it's important to try and know what you've got. But I appreciate that's a very hard thing to do.
Thanks for that. This is putting me in mind of something we talked about before we started recording this, Liz, which is sometimes the challenge of a clash of cultures between the sort of patent-minded life sciences industries and perhaps the sort of tech elements coming in, those that are involved in the software creation development who like to make everything open source. I mean, have you seen that sort of clash play out or heard the challenges there?
I think that is definitely something we're seeing, yes, Lara. I mean, we touched on it earlier when we were saying that the life sciences are changing and, you know, we're seeing a lot more of the kind of AI and software patents in the life sciences now. And I think that there is that clash of cultures where you kind of have people with a more software background inventing in the life sciences sector and therefore having to kind of work out how to manage that and how to manage the kind of differing opinions of inventors in the field. And that's just something that we haven't necessarily seen before. So I think, yeah, there's definitely a change and a shift, I suppose, at least in some areas of the life sciences where we're seeing a different culture come into play and people thinking differently about how to handle their patent applications. I think that's right.
Well, that sort of neatly takes me to where I thought we could land, which is any of this really changing the nature of patent applications themselves, or are they still the most important thing and approached in much the same way as they always have been?
I think in most circumstances that, you know, things haven't probably changed too much. I think applicants still like the certainty that they get with the patent. You know, if there's any concern as to whether something's going to be able to be kept secret, they're going to still want to push forward with their patent application. But I think it maybe pushes applicants to think a bit more about their patent applications and, okay, if I am going to make that leap and disclose my invention when I could be making the other choice and keeping it secret, then I need to make sure I do a proper job of it. So you don't want to be disclosing your invention and not getting the most out of it. So I think we're perhaps seeing people take more care in drafting of their patent applications because they're realizing the kind of balance that there is and the kind of downside that they're taking. And so there's no point drafting an application badly and then you've got the disclosure out there for potentially no gain because you've not thought about the best way in which to obtain protection for that invention. So I think it's important to think carefully about your drafting. And obviously, this isn't the place to start talking about patent drafting. And I'm not going to even start. If I start, you won't be able to shut me up.
That'll be tea time before we leave.
I think that's right. But I think it is something that people are thinking about. And I think one thing in terms of applications that people could think about or applicants could think about if they are going to go down the patent route, is it worth getting some pre-publication examination of my application? So can I get a patent office to look at my application before it's published and give me a view and then think about whether to pull the application at that point if it's not going to get me where I want and then decide to keep the invention secret after all before it ever gets out into the public domain. So I think that's another area where some additional thought before publication of an application can come into play.
Oh, that's really interesting. Well, thank you both. I think that's probably all we've got time for today. We've covered a lot of ground, I feel. I've certainly learned a lot. If any of you listening would like to ask any questions of Chloe, Liz, or anyone else at Cartmills, please do get in touch. Our contact details can be found on the Cartmills website. Also, I just wanted to mention, if you're interested in the topic of trade secrets more broadly, I can recommend having a listen to a prior episode of the podcast in which our very own Chloe and two other colleagues discussed the differences between trade secrets and mere confidential information. And that podcast is handily titled Trade Secrets and Confidential Information. It's also available on our website, and I think you can find some links to other articles on the topic there too. Well, all that remains is for me to thank you for joining us for this episode of Cartmels and Conversation. We hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have, and that you'll join us all again soon.